From deep inside the Death Star's Olive Garden, I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And this is Defrag Tools. What are we going to talk about today, Andrew?
We're going to continue on from last week. What we've got out there in the world is issues, right? And our telemetry says what the big ones are. Last week we talked about background tasks, which we know is an issue, and we explained what code-wise people are making mistakes. Today is to do with HTTP requests in store apps. And so we're just going to show you using the SDK, what people are making mistakes on, and how to fix your code if you're seeing that you're getting these reports from the Windows Store quality page.
Great.
So, I didn't show it last week, so I'll show it this week. If you want to actually get the sample apps, the keyword is Windows 8 sample apps in Bing. So the one we want is this top link, the C#, C++, JavaScript link. In 8.0, they actually didn't give you this last option full. You actually had to download individually. Now you actually can just download this lovely 298 megabyte zip file. It has a lot of samples in it, probably in the order of 100 plus.
Hope you have a fast internet connection.
Yeah, and also unzipping it actually takes a while because it's so many small files. It does take a while for it to unzip. So what I've done is downloaded that. I put it in our My folder under 8.1, under Samples, and then here's the massive zip file. And what I've done is extracted three things. Background tasks is what we did last week. We're going to do HTTP this week, and then next week we're going to do an XML example. So I've got this loaded. So let's just give this a run, and we'll show you what the app does. There's a whole lot of options, but the important thing is we've got this nice default one, get some text, and then this option lets you fool around with your cache, and we can get it from a local host. Well, this machine doesn't have a web server running on it, so hopefully we'll get an error, and you see an error. Now that's...
connection with the server could not be established.
As you expect.
Right.
And then if we say something, say maybe from the cache only, we might get a different error.
Can't find the file. Sure.
So this is operating the way you expect. It's got error handling, it's presenting it to the user, and everything is cool.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it look like in the code, and how does it achieve success? Let's just make some screen real estate. So what we were running here was scenario one. I won't bother going through the other 10. It's about error handling rather than actually any specific thing. The SDK is using the windows.web.http class of HTTP. Remember that because we're about to show something separate later. Makes a whole lot of objects, HTTP clients from that namespace. And here's it being allocated. And then it's got some making the URI required to pass it in as a parameter. And then here's the start of the try block, which is where our safety is coming in. A whole lot of things to do with cache control, which is what this example is all about, setting parameters on the client. And then here's what it all comes down to. The HTTP client asynchronously asking to load that URL. So this is the line that actually does the call to the internet to do the web request.
Get async. So we're making an asynchronous HTTP request.
Yep. And this one's even done even better. They've actually done it as a task and have a cancellation token, which is the way you should be coding things. You shouldn't just be sending them out there and not have any way of canceling stuff. So if someone wants to shut down your app and stuff, you should be canceling all these requests. Like if you're going into suspension and stuff, you should be canceling all these things that are pending. So the way that it works is they've got these two exceptions. This is the response canceling if you added the cancel handler. And then the one that actually does the error handling is this one right here. So let's just get rid of this guy. All right, we're going to compile it. Now, if I run it in the debugger, compiling, what's going to happen is the debugger's going to understand that there's an unhandled exception and show it to us. So we'll do this again, and then the exception will fire,
boom,
everything's bad. So if you're developing this, you know, it's not going to be, it'll be quite obvious to you.
Pretty clear, yeah, something's wrong there.
Yeah. So now it's deployed, let's cancel that, but let's do it the way that the real world would see it. So I'll start the min command prompt. This is already configured, but I'm going to do it again anyway. What I'm going to do is get proc dump to collect all crash jumps. I'm going to get a complete here. You're not going to get a complete or full dump from the telemetry system. I can't do the equivalent of what's called a triage dump in procdump, because a triage dump is actually a mini dump, which is what no options is, plus all this CLR stuff that kicks in that gives you extra pages. Well, procdump doesn't have that support. So my mini dump is smaller than a triage dump, which doesn't really help here in this example. But you just trust that a full dump is kind of close to what we want. And we're going to say, get full dumps and install this as the postmortem debugger, the AE debug debugger, and save the dump files into C dumps.
And of course, we've done several previous episodes on proc dump if people want to go back and look at those.
Yeah. And so if we run this app now, which is this one, and run it, it's going to do its thing and then it's just going to disappear. There's proc dump in the background, kicks in, takes the dump file, and it died. So in the real world, where procdump isn't configured, Windows error reporting is going to kick in instead. It's going to capture that dump file in the background, send it up to Microsoft for triage dump, which is a PII stripped version of the information, and then that's what you're going to receive as a download on the quality portal.
And the user would just see the app go away like that.
Correct. Right?
And they'd wonder what happened.
So what we've got now is kind of like a simulation of what we would have got. The file's a bit bigger, but it doesn't really make much difference from an analysis point of view. We're going to open up in the debugger. There we go. And what we're going to look at is the exception context record. We did this like 3 or 4 weeks ago. C00002 7B is state exception. This is what you're going to see in 8.1. We get this pointer here, and we do DDPOI, that number. Now, I'll go back to episode like 3 or 4 ago on this error code, and we explain how we come to this conclusion. But the important thing is this number here is the important number to recognize. So the 800-72-EFD.
And that is the error, that's the exception code
that actually fired.
Caught. You can usually kind of tell exception codes when you look at them, because they usually start with that 800 some.
Yeah, and the other one is C on the front. So the top two bits are error and warning, and when you add the two together, it's a critical or something. So you get C. It's ironic that critical stands for C, but the bit mask wise, the 8 and the 4 together makes it critical. And so if you see a C on the front, it's even a worse one than the eight.
Sure.
They're all H results, so if you want to
bing. You can do like a bang error, I think, that, right?
Yep. So that's 800-72-EFD. Unable to get it. Now, this happens a lot. I mean, a lot of the error codes are defined by APIs. The debugger's bang error only will report on Windows error codes.
Right. Okay. So this is because this is an HTTP error code. It's not defined in the debugger.
And the same thing, guys, when we look at XML next week, you'll find that there's XML defined ones as well. There's also .NET one defined ones too, and they also won't be available.
So it depends what you're debugging. If you're debugging a Windows component, that bang error usually works.
Yeah. Roughly, if it's originated from an anti-status code, it's good.
Right.
If it originates from an H result from an API, it won't. So the whole point of finding out that number is to make sure that it matches the last exception. So the trick is to find out whether this number matches this number. Sometimes the PE will exist, but it won't match. It just means there's a CLR exception that has fired, and it's been consumed successfully, and then a native error exception, like a C++ exception, happened after it. And that can happen in maybe a collapsing of the ability for the exception handlers to run, for example. Like, we might turn into an access violation halfway through handling this exception, say if memory got all corrupted and stuff. But in general, if the two numbers match, you're good. And this is the stack that it happened at. You can see the sample here, and then scenario one, which is what we're on, and then here's the click event, right?
Right.
And then importantly, here's the text. So it's kind of the text associated with this error code could not be found. A connection with the server could not be established.
And we don't actually see that call to that HTTP async, get async function here, do we?
No, you don't.
Because it's asynchronous.
Well, it's happened, it's fired, and it's returned. It's returned. And now we're at the exception
handler.
This is
sort of the definition of an asynchronous event, yeah. Is that it happened in the past, and then we're coming back afterwards.
And it's definitely the difference, right? I mean, the async stuff gets like hived off into a different work pool. Sometimes it gets run on the GUI thread, sometimes it gets run on the CLR worker threads. But you don't really know where it executes. And you have to be really careful about that. And there's a really good talk, and I'll find a link to it, about when you can and can't use await and the associated need for local variable access or not. So if you don't need local variable access, you're better off letting it go off to the CLR thread pool, because that way it's more distributed. If you do need to use local variables, then you have to stay on the GUI thread and you can't like hive it off. And I'll put that link in the notes.
Okay.
So this one is system.exception. It comes from a Windows, the Windows.web.http namespace. Now this actually isn't the highest telemetried issue. It's actually a different error code. And what I have is I've got some code right here. That I'm going to copy in. So I'm going to undo all these changes, and that's, we're just going to leave that code right there doing its thing.
Putting the exception handler back in.
Yeah. So that's going to happen, and it's just going to fire in the background. And then this new code does roughly exactly the same thing, but instead of using the Windows namespace, it uses the system.net namespace. So this looks a lot like the other one. It's got HTTP, it's got a client, it's got a response, all that stuff. It's roughly the same deal. We make a client, we allocate the client, a client handler, and then a client, and then we ask for a call, and then in this case, I'm going to go contoso.doesnotexist.com, which doesn't exist. Right, and hopefully we should get a DNS error.
Okay.
And then here, we actually have two ways of seeing exceptions, and I know that this thing's factories out web exceptions and HTTP, and we're going to see the relationship of inner exceptions here. And so we'll see which one of these two fires when out of the two, and we'll get this prefix on the front when it happens in the GUI. So let's compile that. So it's going to run that bad one first. I didn't comment it out, but then we'll run the second one and it'll replace the error. So this is us running localhost part, and then you'll see that flicker, and then that's us running the Contoso part. So there was a HTTP request exception. So we didn't get a web exception. So let's kill that. And then what we're going to do is comment out this handler. Now I'm going to leave the web exception one on purpose to show you the effect of inner exceptions. Sometimes you don't get control of inner exceptions. And we'll fire this, do the same thing again, and this time it's gonna crash inside the debugger, and we'll get the break at the unhandled exception thing. So that's now deployed, and could we ran it. Let's run it again outside the debugger, so we come up with a proc dump crash. And we'll look at what actually happens behind the scenes. That's the first one, and then the second one we don't see because it all hid away. Open up the dump file. Oh, this is, I'm sure what, my registry is not very good on this machine. No, I don't want you. All right, so, once again, we're going to look at the exception context record. No surprise, it's a stoic exception. DD, this address, POI, that. Exception code is that number. We'll look it up. Maybe this one's slightly better. No, better.
Although the other one up there, the C27B, looks more like a...
Well, that's the stoic exception one, yeah.
So.
and you'll note that this number matches this number. So this is the one you'll see a lot in the telemetry. We're seeing that this exception is common. You'll note that it fired an HTTP request exception, which is what we didn't pick up, but inside it is a web exception, and this is what a nested exception is. And so you can see the person who ran the code was me. Here's the sample. Here's our scenario one and the click event again. Mm-hmm. And the thing it fired is this web exception was untied. And what happens is you went off, you asked for the request, it ran and it couldn't resolve the name. It even gives you the name right there.
Tells you very clearly what the problem was.
And it tells us that the HTTP web request subsystem in Windows was doing it, right? So if we just gave you this stack, it doesn't really help you much. Sure, you know that you couldn't resolve it, but you didn't know where in your code it kind of originates.
Right.
And so in this case, the web exception was caught by .NET itself. It made a new HTTP request exception, added the one that it caught as an inner exception, and then threw the HTTP request exception. So even though the fundamental exception was the web exception, mm-hmm. you don't see it in your program. You see this capturing of it and then throwing of it into your app space. So in this case, you need to look at the inner exception for the reason, and you need to look at the outer exception for the stack.
Where.
And that's it for HTTP. Go out there, fix your apps. If you're not sure what you should be doing, particularly using cancel handlers and all that stuff, the SDK has a really good example in it. The SDK prefers you to use the windows.net.http namespace, so we suggest that you do that. But saying that, the system.net one, the legacy one from .NET, is still available. Go out there, fix your apps, and make people happy.
Let's get those crash numbers down.
Yeah, I think be pessimistic in your coding, right? You might be saying, yes, I know how to handle 95% of these things, but do you handle things like server overloaded or all these weird things? And particularly, do you understand protocol issues and DNS issues and stuff like that?
Right.
So that's what it's, program defensively is what I'm trying to say.
Sure, always a good practice.
Yep.
Always, just like driving defensively.
Yeah.
Just as important programming.
Yeah.
So that's our show. If you have any comments, put them in the show notes. If you have any questions, things you want us to check out, give us an email, defragtools@microsoft.com. And that's it for this week.
See you next week.
Bye.